Well, really, it's truly wonderful to see all of us here together and to feel your interest in this experiment of the last 3 years. We now, I think, consider ourselves a Sangha within a Sangha, the Wild Woman's Sangha. And we now have a history. We've been practicing together for 3 years now. We've gone on three retreats at Green Gulch Farm, and we've had half-day retreats during the year for the last 3 years also. And all of us have been committed to coming together so that we can deeply inquire and become aware of our social conditioning as women and how to be liberated from those social conditions so that we can deeply come to experience what maybe we don't even know yet about what it means to be practicing Buddhism, what it means to be deeply embodied in our feminine nature. And we've done so much together, and each time that we've been together, we've had a theme that we've been exploring together. So we've developed a practice of embodied listening so that whenever we have an experience or an exercise, we also come together and we listen to each other's experience in this particular way so that we're accessing a deeper embodied knowing. And I wanted to share sort of some of the foundations for our understanding of what we're doing. And one goes back to Simone de Beauvoir, who's considered to be maybe the first feminist philosopher. And she says, she thinks that self-rapport is a mode of resistance. She says, as males are held as the subject and females are othered, acts of being for themselves, acts of women being for themselves, rather than for others, is a resistance to this objectification by centering oneself on one's own experience, inhabiting one's own vision rather than existing through the male gaze allows for more freedom and sovereignty. And just this invitation to have deep rapport for accessing our own experience without being labeled or understood in a kind of distant othering way. And then Audre Lorde wrote, the erotic is a resource within each of us that lies in a deeply female and spiritual plane, firmly rooted in the power of our unexpressed or unrecognized feeling. So she's really trying to say we have to be with our passion. We have to be with what's deeply alive for us. And through that, we can access a deeper knowing and wisdom. So this is all about letting us feel whatever we feel and to also become interested in what that's about underneath. So we also turned to the Prajnaparamita Sutra for our inspiration, because in the Prajnaparamita Sutra, she proclaims, and Prajnaparamita is the mother of all Buddhas, and she proclaims, arouse great feeling of wanting to be in the presence of the mother of all Buddhas, for the arousal of our impassioned love of the world is like being pregnant. When a pregnant woman is all astir with pains, one should know that the time has come to give birth. So again, we're trying to awaken a sort of deeply felt level of experiencing. And we wanted to share with you, we've worked up a mission statement. And we wanted to share it with you because we've spent 3 years considering this. If we're meeting together and we want to invite other people to come join us, what is the mission that we're following? And we believe experiencing is primary, and embodiment is a visceral expression. It is life expressing itself. And this time, we really were able to sort of identify that embodiment accesses a primal knowing, a knowing that actually forms before words or before concepts. And that kind of primal knowing is what we want to bring forth. We're moving beyond the duality of male and female, and we believe this is essential to the awakening of self for all beings. That duality we want to move beyond. And that finally, creativity is an active pathway to shake us loose from habits and beliefs of limitation. It awakens our unique expression of the truth of our being. So creative expression has also been built into all of our time together. So we believe that what we're doing is deepening the awakening of self and all beings through embodied practice grounded in feminine wisdom. We embrace our individual backgrounds, spiritual practices, ancestors, personal collective gender experiences. Together, we create a sisterhood for inner inquiry and growth through sharing truths arising from deep within and between us. It's hard to communicate the kind of container, I guess, that we feel we've been able to build and develop, and it's been through our communion with each other, through listening without judgment, for honoring our diversity, and that kind of way of being together has created a sense of safety that we can go deep. And, you know, as we've said many times, any experience we have is multi-layered. And so if we just stay on the surface, say, of our social conditioning or the ways that we have been taught to think about ourselves, it's just on the surface waves. And by sitting together in zazen, by doing yoga, by sharing in this listening way that we have learned to do, we can go deep down and discover some new insights about ourselves. And I think if you look at the screen for a moment, this retreat, our theme was creating our future moment by moment. And that's what we thought of as the theme for this four-day retreat. And it turned out, Barbara and I worked together on this for a long time, that we were really intending to create a process of transformation that was built on all the different stages of what we did together, beginning with turning to our own suffering and our experience of the suffering of the world. And now I'm going to let Barbara go into the details.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Well, yes, transformation was at the heart of what we was the dynamic of the weekend. And transformation is not a departure from Buddhist practice. Buddhist practice is about transformation. So this was a container in which we were invited to go deeper into our own practice. There's a lot of trouble in the world, trouble in our own lives, trouble in the world showing up in our lives in a particular way. And we wanted to turn toward the suffering of the world rather than away from it. And why is that significant? Because if we can be with the suffering without coming up with conclusions about how we should act, maybe something will arise creatively. So our theme again was creating the future moment by moment by first turning toward our suffering. So that was the beginning of our weekend. And through the 4 days together, we began to transform from our own suffering to looking at the suffering of the world. And then how might we begin to pivot that suffering into creating a future? And what do we envision for a future? Our activities involved sitting, a lot of sitting practice with these themes, journaling about it, and then embodied body scans to tune into what is happening inside of our bodies at this moment, and then beginning to shift out, saying, let's start to open things up. Let's open up our hands. Let's open our bodies. We did yoga practice that was about opening. We did art practices. We walked into the wild. We ate together. We shared deeply through the 3 years of our being together. And some of us have been together since the beginning, the inception of this. We've really come to trust that we can be together and say things and open our hearts. You know, there's a definition of enlightenment, which means an undefended heart. Maybe we started to experience some of that together. We built an altar over the weekend. We started out the beginning evening of bringing things to the altar that signified the suffering of the world as we experience it. So we added that to the altar the first night. And then throughout the weekend, we had activities where we added to the altar. So we built this glorious altar together. And am I leaving anything out? Oh, yes. So we inquired to begin with, what are the stories we've told ourselves about ourselves? What stories do we begin with? And as a way to access how that has shown up with us in our bodies and in our lives. And at the end, we began to ask, what is the stories we now want to tell about ourselves? What do we want to bring forth into the world to create this future? So, is that it?
Oops. Well, just
to say that we were intentionally opening up different channels,
of inquiry, like journaling, for example. We also had people like going out into the wild and bringing something in from the wild to put on the altar. We engaged in a very complex art project on Saturday, and then we also did embodied koan theater, where we broke up into small groups, and each group was given a koan, and each group had to figure out how to actually enact the koan, so that we could like learn it through our bodies, through experiencing, and that was both fun and challenging, and we could then question all the actors, you know, why did you do it this way or why did you do it that way? So we began to have the actors actually speaking from the parts they were playing, that we could learn from that as well. And Barbara led us in this wonderful art project. And then on Sunday, many of us sat with the larger community in the temple. And then we all heard Norman Fisher give a Dharma talk. So there was that weaving in with the larger community at the very end.
And I'd like to add that we had members of the community come on Sunday and sit with us. And we are really grateful for that. And others of you who didn't attend, but we know that you were sitting with us in at your altars and supporting us in the weekend. We're very grateful for that.
Yeah, so that's kind of our overview. And I mean, all along, we just were always respecting diversity. We made sure that differing opinions were heard or different ways of expression. And I know that each person who came actually was transformed in a different way. And so it's not at all one way or one outcome. And so that's why we have our panel here, to just share with us what your experiences were, what felt valuable to you, what clarity might have come, or questions too. So we'll just start with Valerie Hansen.
Well, I was fortunate enough to attend all three retreats. And so 3 years ago, when I first came to Valley Streams, it was a great way to get to know the women. And I just want to say that Doralee and Barbara, they put a lot of effort and heart and soul into creating a really wonderful retreat and a wonderful experience with, you know, very highly organized and lots of variety, you know, art, drama, even have music and some dance in there. And the whole experience was beautiful. It was my first time ever at a Zen monastery or center as well. So I was really impressed. And the food was delicious. Learning to eat in silence with a group of people was wonderful. And the setting was amazing, listening to the frogs at night. It's a magical place. So just, you know, that's underneath everything. And then the experiences, well, there was so much to tell, and I didn't take any notes, so I'm just going off of my memory. But the things that came to me as I was sitting before we met today, trying to jog my memory, and I just know that the first retreat, we dedicated the retreat to our ancestors. And so I was thinking, who do I want to dedicate it to? And I thought of my grandmother and my mother. And I hadn't thought of them very much in regards to what I received from them. And then it occurred to me that what I received was like the most important gift ever possible, which is my spiritual path. And because they introduced me to meditation when I was very, very young, and they introduced me to Eastern religion. And so that came out of the first retreat. And then the second retreat, I can't remember, but the third retreat's fresh in my memory because that didn't happen too long ago. And what I got out of that was, ironically, through the hardest part for me, which was the Cohen Theater, because I have a bit of performance anxiety, and speaking and acting out a play and memorizing my lines was a little bit out of my wheelhouse. But I will say that I learned from that experience, and it stayed with me. And what I learned is that, because the koan we received, which was a wonderful koan on the charnel, the five sisters in the charnel ground, something like that. And my sister, who happens to be sitting right over there, Lori, she and I got to be sisters together and go to the charnel grounds and receive enlightenment. And just, I don't know, it was just being with her. And Barbara was in my group too, just talking about the koan and, you know, diving deep into its meaning and the symbolism. It was a wonderful experience, but the acting out part was really hard for me. But like I said, it did stick with me. And what I got out of it was that the punchline was, you, at least for me, you cannot do this alone. You need your Sangha, you need your sisters and your brothers in the Sangha. And it makes it so much more fun to not do it by yourself. This whole path of enlightenment, which I've only taken a tiptoe onto that path.
This is Karen Hamilton.
I'm Karen, and I also attended all three of the retreats. So I get them kind of mixed up sometimes, but this last one is fresher in my memory, and I wrote a few things down. I was kind of confused about the theme of creating our future now. But upon reflecting it, well, first I should say, yes, being at Green Gulch is always a treat. And I've done, many formal retreats at Green Gulch. And those are wonderful, too. But, I mean, this way of being able to experience it a little bit differently. So, as I'll explain, and I appreciated all the different activities that we did that kind of were a balance to sitting still in Zazen, different ways of being here now. So, as I said, that creating our future now, it was kind of confusing for me. I didn't think it was going to be a planning session, but I thought of a shirt that I have that actually is from Green Gulch Farm, and it has some calligraphy by Reb Anderson on it, and it says... even though I couldn't really read it, but what it does say in Japanese, I guess, characters, is deep belief in cause and effect. So, I mean, the idea being, you know, if we can learn to be present, whichever now we're in, then that can... help us be present in the future, whatever that is. And it also can help us to be present with people that we love and people that maybe we don't love, but it helps us to be present in a different way. Also, it made me think about, I've been reading the book that Cynthia Keir wrote about Darlene Cohen and some of her teachings. It was such I can't even imagine what a challenge she faced being present with her very painful disease of rheumatoid arthritis. And yet she was able to be present with it and notice the places that were not painful and the sun shining through the window, so that she actually then was able to become a great teacher despite all of that difficulty that she had to face at a pretty young age. So I'll just say that. I would say that, I'll comment on the Koan Theater. We were asked to bring props, whatever that is. You know, we didn't know which Koan we were going to be presenting and with whom, but we knew we were going to be presenting one. And so everybody just brought props and whatever that meant to them. And so then about 4 or 5 of us, I guess, were in each group, and we were given our text, and we figured it out, and just magically we figured it out, and we were able to present it that evening to the rest of the group. And I will say that it was so different and instructive to actually, you know, quote unquote, embody the koan, be one of the characters in the story. It really it's kind of like improv or just being there, you know, being present. And the other one that I, of course, liked was the one that Barbara led us in. I mean, besides the yoga and the building the altar together and which helped to build community and journaling and sharing, deep listening. Those all contributed to all of the experience, I guess. But Barbara led us in something called asemic writing, which I'd never heard of before. And as I understand it, it's picking, what we did anyway, is that we picked three words from our writing exercise that were that we wanted to carry forward with us. And then we made like a gesture drawing kind of, but nothing recognizable, no recognizable characters, no recognizable drawing, just some expression. And then we connected those together and created a picture of it. And, well, it did not look like this, but this is what mine looked like. I mean, you can't tell it's nothing in particular, you know, but to me it meant something because my three words were... The three words that I picked out were that I wanted to carry forward were silence, that is, for me, making time for silent, silence in nature or silence in the studio or just simply, you know, silence in Zazen or whatever. And listening friends was the second phrase, so trying to spend more time with friends and for speaking openly and listening, trying to listen deeply. And support or help. And I was thinking about that. I mean, recently I signed up to take a this is an online class from Zen Center, San Francisco Zen Center, on self-compassion and art journaling. And anyway, I had a feeling that maybe this experience had something to do with wanting to carry that over. And I did enjoy doing that a lot. And again, kind of helping to be present in the moment so that maybe, you know, it spreads. Like Suzuki Roshi said, shine one corner. So that's what I've been carrying with me.
Thank you.
My name is Lori, and this was my first Wild Women's Retreat. And the first overnight retreat I had done probably since many years, like pre-COVID. What opened up for me is similar to what the theme that the others have spoken about. And what opened up for me in a deeper way was just the experience of Sangha and enlightenment together. During the retreat, we had several periods of meditation and body work, and I felt like that set the foundation of me moving down into the body. And as we've all experienced here, we chant, we bow. But there was a different experience for me after doing the body work and the yoga. How that manifested was our last night, we all participated in the Koan Theater. I was in the group with the seven wise women in the charnel ground. Like Valerie, I was apprehensive about acting in a koan theater. But that being said, through the process of the movement and the activity, I had this experience of Sangha and the body. And the way that happened was in the koan, the seven sisters go to the charnel grounds where they see a corpse, and all seven sisters become enlightened. All seven sisters become enlightened. And how we acted that out was Valerie and I joined arms, and we skipped to the charnel grounds. And I experienced that in my body was we joined hands and skipped to the charnel grounds, meaning we were together. We were not separate. We joined together as Sangha, as this experience, as an opportunity to for enlightenment. And so I just had like a really strong sensation in my body. And later, as I was reflecting on that, I came back to the teaching of Soto Zen, of Mahayana Buddhism. And that is the principle is that we sit here, we have our right effort, but we're also in service and we're also together. And we do this together on Zoom, in the room, and you know, beyond. We have people with us all across, you know, in Green Gulch and Tassajara and on in the lineage. And so it's just given me a deeper appreciation of Sangha, of being together in this practice. So that is definitely, that is one the experience that I wanted to share. And how I've moved forward since we've come back from the retreat is I'm here with a little nerves in my stomach, but sharing my experience, but also in daily life, what I've tried to do is look for those times when I get tightness in the body, where I retreat, and then just take a breath and use that as an opportunity to join and to open up the opportunity for enlightenment together. Thank you.
Well, wow, thank you both, all three of you, so much for what you shared. Yeah. And maybe this is just the beginning. Maybe some questions have come up for you, and we have here with us so many other wonderful women who are on the retreat too, and they may be offering their experience. I don't know, but this is just a chance to express or ask questions. We're here together. We're just having a conversation.
Good evening, everyone. I was at the retreat. I just wanted to add all those experiences.
Could you just say your name, please, Kara?
Yes, I'm Kara. Sharing with the Sangha was a very strong point, but I wanted to say this poem that Dorley opened the whole retreat with, so I want to share that. It's a poem by Rilke. Be patient with all that's unresolved in your heart. Try to love the questions themselves. Don't seek the answers which cannot be given to you, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now, and perhaps you will gradually find yourself living the answer. So that set the whole thing for me, and the Sangha, the sisterhood, enlightenment, whatever you call this, was invaluable, providing the safe place to share my vulnerability. I felt very welcome and warm. And basically, I came away with, it's absolutely okay not knowing the future or now. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the poem, Kella. I love that, not knowing the future or now. And I was curious, how many women were in the retreat this year altogether?
Altogether, we were 15.
Wow. I really liked what you were talking about earlier, Dorley, exploring the stories that you have of your, that we have of ourselves, that constrain us, whether it's our social world as women or whatever it is. And that's that interests me because that's, I'm constantly telling stories, and once in a while I realize, oh, I'm constantly telling stories, and it's always about me. But I'm not sure I understand what the meta story is, if you will. And I wonder if you could say a bit more about what that process was like and what conclusions were drawn or just how it was.
You mean how we sort of transformed from the stories we usually tell ourselves to creating a new story? Is that kind of what you mean? But, I mean, just...
I'm just curious actually what you mean and, how what the experience
well, I
of
think,
Akti
well,
was.
At the beginning, you know, when we... came to the altar with a symbol of how we personally experience suffering in the world, that in that turning towards our own suffering also opened up the territory of grief and loss. So the next day, too, we were invited to be able to experience our own grief and loss. And this was all in the direction of turning to suffering first. And then out of that, then, we could begin to see the story that we've been telling ourselves about our life. You know, like, oh, I think I'm too old for this, for example, or something like that. And to be able to actually name it and then journal about it. And then once we journaled about it, then we broke up into small groups and did this embodied listening practice, which seems to evoke more to come that we didn't know about the meaning.
I'm sorry, what kind of practice?
We have a whole practice we've been developing called embodied listening. It's a way that we listen to each other and respond so that what we're hearing points to the body for something more to come. And then often that starts to happen. And out of that new coming then is sort of maybe the fertile ground for what may now emerge as a new story. But then I think we also moved, and Barbara, you say something here too, we moved from our own personal lives to looking more out to the world in general too, so that we're expanding even our awareness of suffering and life and so forth. And then once we started wondering about, well, what is the story we want to tell about our life now, that's when we moved into doing the art project. And in doing the art project, we were integrating our journal writing, the words and language in our journal writing that had sort of like nascent meaning in it. Like you can hear a word and you know that your body likes the word, and so that means there's a lot more here. We kind of used that as getting the words for the art project. So these were all these stages that went through that I think did awaken for many of us something really new about how we want to be in our life. I don't know, does that communicate? And Barbara.
Thank you.
Well, also I want to say that it was really interesting to see the places that we get stuck. Like the Cohen Theater having some trepidations about performance, whatever our story is about performance. The art project was, at first people sort of grumbled. Like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, and then something shifted and it just started to work its magic on them. So that was kind of an unexpected thing for me to observe in people, is the places that you get stuck. And how does that relate to the stories you've been told?
I can give an example of this because I got really, it was just very frustrated making all these circles and so forth. And then Barbara says to me, "Why are you being so impatient?" And I said, "I'm not being impatient. What are you talking about?" And then I kind of sat with it over lunch, and then I came back and I said, "Okay, I'm going to do it." So I spent a whole long time finishing my thing I was making. And then what I realized was, I shouldn't be impatient, because what I'm drawing here is really complex. So it was more there than I could see before, but I had to deal with being confronted with some part of myself that I didn't want to see.
Me!
Thank you very much. You mentioned conditioning. I was wondering if you could tell me more about that experience, maybe share examples of conditioning that you became aware of, what that was like to have that experience, and what insights you gained from becoming aware of the conditioning.
I feel like the biggest thing that I took away from our sisterhood at Green Gulch is to unknot the thinking, because I was stuck on the word wild. Like, I thought we were going to be out in the wild, and I was a little bummed out about my container. But that's all the thinking. I mean, even with the koan, like, I was so worried that there wasn't enough time allowed, that, you know, this is a big thing. We have to figure out what it is. We got to, like, sort out our costumes. And then we have to, like, pick who's going to be who. And kind of like what Karen said, it was really, it just kind of unfolded. And, we, you know, as we got to know each other, everything just kind of came into place. Just kind of focusing the attention, and then, you know, writing about it. I didn't want to write about it. My conditioning is I don't write. I don't like it. So I was a little uncomfortable, but at the same time, I have to realize that Zen is undoing what I think is good for me. And so I was happy to go.
There's a story. I want to just share something that's behind the scenes of all this, and that is the collaboration between Doralee and I that has grown over the last couple of years. We're two pretty strong women, pretty opinionated, even with a deep Zen practice, which we think is deep. And we've come to a place that is really, really true collaboration. And I think that's why the weekend was meaningful to people, because they could sense that. And because everything was true collaboration, I've never experienced that in my life. Collaboration for me was always me convincing you to do what I want to do. And this embodied listening, we live that. When we've lived this, I mean, we started working on this 6 months before the retreat. So that is just a really great success out of all of this. So thank you.
Well, this is a big question you're asking, first of all. I just want to say, Michael, what do you mean by social conditioning? And, you know, it's not just that women are social conditioned. We all are. And it's more like what we internalize from our parents, from our culture, about how we're supposed, what it means to be a good person or how to be a person. I mean, I could think of one example is I felt I got the message, don't be too loud. Like that was part of my social conditioning. And so, you know, I have a soft voice, but also, you know, the times that I've been really loud, you know, just out of excitement or enthusiasm or something, then I have some judgment of that. So that would be another example. Or, you know, women aren't supposed to be competitive. They're supposed to be cooperative. I mean, there's just a lot of messages that a lot of times we're not fully aware of, or we're not fully aware of how we are living those things out without being aware of it. So by naming a lot of that and being able to own it and talk about it, then that's when the liberation starts to come. We're not holding on to it so much anymore. It's no longer defining us anymore. We're already outside of it. And then you begin to wonder what's going to emerge, you know, that's not of that. But I'm sure other people have different answers to this question. So. Cedar Rose.
I wanted to say something about conditioning, and I have to be in this realm of talking about conditioning every day since I'm a couples therapist. But I look the picture of conditioning, people pleasing, you know, five children, you name it. And the transformation that I've been doing my whole life, but that we did a lot more of here, was like starting to, when you like plug into the different ways of knowing, sorry, I'm nervous, I'm out of breath. Breathe. When you plug into different ways of knowing, you know, through our Zen practice, through intuition, through art, through theater, it turns you into a powerful, it tunes you into a powerful energy. And it overcomes, like, any conditioning, and it makes all the things about me, like, powerful. And so just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
Okay, so the whole experience, the embodied listening guidelines was very helpful. And then we broke out into small groups, which was I think it's a very important, because when we did that, I felt I was very intimate with that person expressing whatever is experience they're talking about, really connected. There's a connection when you really be able to embody, listen. And when you talk about something, you really watch the other person's gestures, because the words doesn't always, you know, express. Your body does. And that experience was really, really helpful. And it just, I felt more connected and intimate with this person.
As a listener.
As a listener, so that we all get connected. Yes.
I'm just double-checking on Zoom. I know we have people that are there, present, and listening, and just if anybody there wanted to say something. It's okay not. But
okay. I wanted to say something. I'm Valerie 0.5. Oh, sorry, Mike. Sorry. I'm Valerie 0.5. I'm grieving. I'm probably going to cry. I have had two relatives, close relatives, die in the last year. And coming to the retreat, I was still grieving, but there was this joy and happiness also. And I have a little story to tell, now that we're telling stories, is that today I had what we call, and my sister and I call, a grief attack, where you just fly into grief. And and I was yelling, singing. I sang Que Sera, Sera. I did everything, and I think I scared the dog across the street. He was barking, I think. So we embody those things, and I think that's all I can say for now. Thank you.
I forgot to mention my most favorite thing was the altar building, because it really told a little bit about each of our families, because we were offering an ancestor. And that was really deep and meaningful for me to get to know you as a sister. And for me, when I didn't even realize I was honoring somebody who I was really, really upset with. And in the process of sorting that all out, I was able to forgive that person there. And I had no idea that was going to happen. And so that was really, really beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.